not to go. I took a peek out, saw you alone. I gave it everything I got. I tried to stop you, I could not. I'm here to tell you that's a lie. I got excited, I got depressed. The situation and then the rest. Feel out the other's test extreme. I came prepared to keep it mean. I pressed a button on the scene. I got to help you find the sound. I held a piece off ground and down. Thought that it meant you'd come around.
This is Max Landers, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Today is a very exciting day. We have a special guest, our second guest on our show, on Fireside Chat, and her name is Rachel Halliday. She's a coxswain for the Tufts men's crew team. I'm very close to her. She does an excellent job. She's great at what she does. Also a triple major. So what are you? Are you you're French, you're poli-sci, and international relations, so all very tied together, but all very interesting. So welcome on.
Thank you.
Can you not hear yourself? Okay. Oh,
there we go. That's me.
All right. Okay. There you go.
Now I know that I'm on. It would be sad if we did the whole thing and I wasn't on.
Yeah, I know.
I'm political science, international relations, and French.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for having me. Who was the first guest, Max?
The first guest was Spencer Walsh.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Radio podcast host extraordinaire.
Yeah, no, he's unbelievable. He did a great job, and we just kind of talked about just politics in general, and we talked about the elections that just happened and the affirmative action case that's in the Supreme Court. So it was actually really interesting, and it was
cool.
Recorded too, which was really cool. Like, I didn't even know that, so I have that recording, and who knows if I eventually want to put it up on Spotify
or have a
YouTube channel, I can put it up.
That's so fun.
But it was great. It was a good first experience. I'm glad that I did it. So
yeah.
Well, welcome in. This is all about you.
Thanks.
Why don't we just get started? So you're a senior now.
Yeah.
How do you feel? We're approaching the halfway point.
I know.
This is a
Isn't
big
that
moment.
Crazy? I feel like it's been so fast. Partially because I was at home for a lot of it, or like I was just thinking, or I was talking to my housemates the other day about how I, like, for the first time in college, I'm making friends with people in my classes, because the first year I was in big seminars, so I didn't really meet anyone, and then for 2 years we were on Zoom. So I'm just now meeting my classmates, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited to graduate, but it's also a little bit, like, I feel like I just started high school.
Really?
So,
okay.
But, yeah, a little bit overwhelming, too. Like, nobody really tells you what to do once you graduate. You just have to kind of figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And so, do you have any plans for post-graduation or grad
not
school?
Really.
Or?
Well, I know that I want to go to grad school eventually. The field of, like, international relations and political science is very biased towards people with graduate degrees. Like, you just can't make a lot of money. or have a particularly interesting job without a graduate degree in the types of stuff that I want to do, which is like kind of messed up, but it is what it is. But I don't know what I want to do in graduate school. And so I'm not going to apply if I don't know what I want to do. That seems like a recipe for disaster. So working on finding jobs. But, you know, jobs don't really come find you. You have to go find them.
Right. So
it's kind of a lot of work and also difficult to know, like, where I'm going to be.
Sure. Do you, would you work for, like, an NGO or, like, a...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so there's kind of, like, a... There are a few sets of organizations that I could possibly work for. One is, like, big NGO, like USAID, IMF, World Bank, the ones that have really prestigious names. Those look great on a resume, but you're, like, doing paperwork
right,
for most of it.
Right, it's grunt work.
It's not interesting. And also, I, like, take issue with some of the ethos of those organizations, so I'm not really interested in working for them. And then there are smaller NGOs that work in kind of like a parallel space that's more on the ground, and I would really like to work there, but they're much more difficult. Like, I don't know about a lot of them, and then also they're very small. They don't really have the budget for like an undergraduate to come work for them. Then there's like the government, but I don't really want to go work for the State Department. That's so boring.
Yeah.
Or like a research institution, like
a think tank or something.
Yeah,
like
a think tank. Like Brookings or the Carnegie Endowment.
Sure.
Or even smaller nonprofit think tanks that kind of work that aren't like as well known. But it's difficult to find a job that's interesting because you have to do it through networking instead of just like an application.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So sounds like finance.
I really want to find someone that wants to like teach me and work with me instead of just like give me paperwork to do. And so in order to find someone that wants to teach me, they have to know who I am.
Right.
So
has Tufts helped you at all with that?
Absolutely not. To be fair, I've like never gone to the Career Center.
Okay.
Which maybe I should have, or maybe I could.
You could.
I could.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they've not helped me at all. I think my professors have like offered to put me in touch with people, kind of, and then like never really done it.
Right.
And the university hasn't been helpful. But also, I'm privileged because I'm from DC and I have a lot of like acquaintances, like family friends that are in the field.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am able to do networking because I know people.
Yeah.
My parents know people.
Yeah. Isn't that such a weird, I don't know. I think the whole networking, I think it's a bunch of crap actually, partly. It's just like really,
it's not fun.
It's
and
not
also,
fun and
I
it's
feel,
fake.
It's so fake. Well, and then like I met with this woman and she was like, yeah, I'm going to email you contact information for these two other people, and that was going to be like the next step in my networking, and she just never did. And I don't really care enough to like follow up with her,
right?
But then like that whole train is dead,
right?
So oh well. I guess I'll go down a different
right
networking
path. You never know where like things are going to come from. So but yeah, I don't know. I mean I'm trying to like get an internship this summer for finance, which obviously
so
is
much work.
Ridiculous. And it's just the whole, I mean, it makes me so cynical. It's like the whole industry is so fake.
Yeah.
I feel just from my point of view, and it's very touchy-feely, and you know, I've been applying everywhere and just getting rejected everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's
just,
like,
I mean,
ridiculous.
The past 2 years I've applied to like over a dozen internships each time and never, honestly, like never even gotten responses from most of them. I've been rejected from maybe three. And the rest just never responded.
So interesting.
And it's like on paper, I'm literally the perfect applicant.
Right.
For anything.
Right.
Like, I have great grades. Mm-hmm. I'm good at writing. I have good extracurriculars.
Yep.
But there's always someone that's like more interesting than you. So you just gotta wait until it fits.
Right.
And so far,
nothing has
fit.
Really fit yet.
So,
okay. Well, it'll come together.
It'll,
I'm more
yeah,
than confident.
Yeah. It will come together.
Yeah.
But
okay.
It
good.
Takes time. Yeah.
Good. So, Are you happy with your college? Have you been, I guess, how do I phrase this? Have you been happy with your college experience? Are you glad that you chose Tufts? Are you glad that you've, I mean, you've obviously invested yourself so much into, you know, rowing, which is just one, you know, egg basket, as have I, but do you think that's been worth it to you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm really glad I came to Tufts. I think sometimes when I think about rowing, I'm like, oh, because I didn't get recruited. I didn't do any of the recruiting process. I was just kind of like, I didn't really realize it was an option until after I had missed the boat. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, I should have gone to like a D1 university and I could be going faster. And I'm like, wait, I don't actually think that would be like any more fun at all. Like I have so much fun here. And in terms of rowing, I'm so happy I invested my time. I was just talking to my housemate Eden about how lucky we are to have so many friends, and specifically about a friend, like we have a mutual friend who's like having a hard time and feels very alone. And this person doesn't like have anyone that she feels like she can turn to. And we were both like, that's so sad. I have so many people that I feel like I could turn to, and there could be so many things that could go wrong. Like so many people in my life could be like, I never want to speak with you again. And I would still have such a long list of people. So on that side of things, I feel really lucky. And also it's really great to feel like I have something that I like apply myself to that I'm excited about. That's mine. And like, it's not just mine. It's the whole team's.
Right.
But, yeah, it's really empowering to like take ownership of something and be excited about it. And like I don't want to say like have a reason to get up in the morning, but like, it's the reason why I set my alarm is like to get up from practice. And I enjoy the off season, but by the end, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I get up at like 9:30 in the morning. Like, this is so boring. Yeah, and then in terms of like the university, I'm really happy that I'm here. The academics that I have, the opportunities I have in academics, I think are better here than like, honestly, like anywhere else in the country. The ability to have small classes but still at a prestigious institution with professors that are like really smart, and having the draw of the Fletcher School as like a hiring incentive to get really, really intelligent political science professors, I think is really appealing. I feel like I've learned a lot. I like the all the reasons that I chose it. Location, I like the location. Size, I really like the size. Academics, I really like the political science department. I think the one thing that is a little bit disappointing, well, there are two things, and they're relatively small. The first is that I think the econ department's kind of weak.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would agree with that.
Yeah. Especially because you study finance, right?
Econ, yeah. Quant econ.
Well, quant econ. I study like trade, like international trade. So very different parts of the econ department. I feel like the political science department does a really good job of doing political economy, like how politics and economics impact each other. And the econ department literally ignores everything else except their little graphs.
Yep.
Which feels very one-sided to me. And then the other thing is that I'm a French major, and they're changing it this year, but it'll be too late for me because I will have graduated already. But the French major is very French focused. Like, there's no diaspora, there's no politics. It's like all French literature, which I've enjoyed reading French literature, but like I can only read so much romantic, like so much Voltaire.
Really? A lot of Voltaire.
Well, honestly, I haven't really read that much Voltaire, but it's kind of just like all of the French white guys and some white women from like 1600 to 1960, basically. That's like all I've read. And for the first time this semester, I'm taking a class that has more to do with culture. And I'm like, why? Like, where has this been? There's no politics. And I study West Africa, which is colonized by the French. And so I haven't read any West African literature. I haven't spoken in French about West Africa in any of my French classes. And I feel like there's a missed opportunity there to, like, be more interesting. But I know they're hiring new people and they're expanding the major, so.
Okay, interesting. Are you Hopefully have you been happy coming. With the IR department, which is I know part I guess part of the poli sci department in some
yeah,
some way shape
I mean,
or form, but
I think it's really interesting that what like the third biggest major at the university isn't a department, it's a program.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, you're right. It is not a department. That's right.
You
I remember.
Can't. There's no IR building. Mm-hmm. There's no. I mean, they're in the political science building. They're like at the ground floor.
Right.
But there's no IR faculty. It's just the faculty from other departments that are like pulled into the program.
Right.
I've been satisfied with it because it's so. It doesn't feel restrictive to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like. I basically just took classes that I wanted and ended up with three majors. I didn't have to be super specific about what I was taking. I mean, I like thought about it, obviously, but I don't know. Like, all of our friends that are engineers, they're like, they have no choice. And I had so much choice. And so I think that's great. But I do kind of wish it felt like there was a little bit more of like a community. I don't know. Other IR majors. Like, I know other IR majors because, but I know them from other places, not because they're IR majors. I guess it's kind of hard to have community in such a big group.
Sure.
But
yeah, that's still so interesting that they don't have a, I guess they do have a dedicated space, but it's not a substantial dedicated
no,
space, and I'm
like
sure it's not like you're hanging out
in the
there.
Basement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they don't do programming really. Like, the political science department does programming. They have, like, coffees for professors and students. They put on different, like, speakers that you can go see. And I guess maybe the IR department does it, and I just don't know about it. But, yeah, it just feels a lot more, like, spread out.
Really?
Lot less
decentralized.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like
decentralized. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the education isn't good.
Right. Right.
I think. Yeah. I think the major is great. I like the flexibility a lot. I like that I have so many friends that are IR majors, and we've taken one class in common,
mm-hmm.
or maybe like two or three classes in common, and those classes are like Intro to International Relations,
right.
and Ec 5. It's like I think that's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a very broad scope. It demystifies the notion that international relations looks like one type of thing.
Sure, yeah. It's so big.
Which I think is great. So you're just econ, you're not IR, right?
Yeah, I thought about doing IR like very briefly at the beginning of second semester freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, but it wasn't my forte. I was fine at writing the essays. I mean, I got a good grade and everything, but it was just like, I couldn't see myself like doing this, and it's, and I didn't know what I would do afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. So, you know, I think econ's a fine path to go down. Hopefully, like I'm still not really sure what the heck I'm going to do with that, but, and
it sets you up for to do.
Exactly. Like it gives
so
me
much.
A lot of options, which is nice.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy, like, talking politics. I wouldn't say I'm super knowledgeable. I'm not a policy nerd or a political nerd.
Yeah.
Because I've experienced those at our school and they're next level and unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not that. But it's very fun, like, kind of discussing social issues. I think discussing
social
issues
is super interesting. I mean, that's what I study. I love talking about. Do you want to talk politics
let's
now?
Let's talk politics.
I love talking
we
politics.
We can do that. So, So you can just tell me about like Western Africa, like
yeah,
what your
research.
Yeah, tell me about that. That sounds
so
really cool.
So I'm writing a thesis right now in political science, and it's about West Africa, including Chad. So West Africa is 16 countries on the western portion of the continent of Africa. Chad is like on the eastern side of West Africa, and I include it in West Africa, and some people include it in West Africa, and some people don't. For the purposes of this discussion, Chad's in West Africa. So it's a set of 16 countries on the continent of Africa. Some of those countries were colonized by France. Some of them were colonized by Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Liberia was not ever colonized, which is interesting. And it's in West Africa. The Sahara Desert is there.
Yeah, that's right.
So the part of my research, so what I do for my research, I study military coups.
Really? Okay. That's interesting.
So West Africa has had the most prolific history of military coups of anywhere in the world. It's had the most military coups, which is interesting. Why this region? Why has this region had a lot of military coups? Why has this region had a lot of military coups compared to other regions on the continent? Why has it had more military coups than South America, right, where there have also been a lot of military coups? But specifically, since kind of the end of the Cold War, and especially since the, like, 2000, there have been a lot fewer coups in the world, in Africa, in West Africa. But since 2020, there have been 7 coups in West Africa, I think. I could be counting wrong. Let's say 7. Which is crazy. In like 2.5 years, there have been 7 military coups. So the point of my, or the question that my research project is asking is, there's clearly been a change since 2000.
Sure.
What has caused this change? Why have there been fewer military coups since 2000? But then why have some countries in West Africa had multiple military coups since then, while others have had either no military coup or have had one military coup and then successfully transferred back to civilian rule? That's my question. And my hypotheses are multifaceted. Something that's fun in political science is that there's never one reason that anything happens.
Sure.
So doing research is kind of difficult, but also really exciting, because you can say, well, I think this is why. It's like, okay, well, then you're ignoring this and this and this and this. So that's true. But my hypotheses that I'm laying out, there are a few things. So first, background. The Cold War, the end of the Cold War, is a critical juncture in West African politics, or at least that's what I'm arguing. And this is pretty well documented in the literature for a few reasons. First, after the end of the Cold War, the main reason is that there was a shift in the international order, which is another thing we can talk about, because I talk a lot about the international order. I say international order, what I mean is basically like the US, France, and the UK.
Sounds sinister, but yeah.
but kind of like the powers that be in international relations decided that elections were really important. Like, authoritarianism, that's so out. Like, so uncool. Elections are really important. And this meant a few things. This meant, first, international aid became increasingly tied to elections. So, if you want to get checks from the U.S., you need to have elections. So then, if you're a military leader, you're screwed. You're not going to get military aid anymore. And the U.S. did cut off aid for countries that had military leaders. So that's one big thing. Because of this, a lot more elections started happening. So suddenly, when you think about we're doing politics. Like, I don't like the way the country's going. I have different ideas. How am I going to change the political agenda? How am I going to influence new politics? Before, one of the main ways was coercion, like force or the credible threat of force.
Sure.
Now we have more elections as a possibility. And in some places, elections are meaningless. It's like a sham election. You just have it. Nothing really happens. But some places, elections were introduced really effectively. So that's the second thing. More elections, partially because of the first thing, right? And then another thing that happened because of the first thing are regional security regimes that are anti-coup. So Africa has a history of Pan-Africanism, the idea that the continent should unite into either regional groups or like a continental group for political and economic reasons. And since kind of the end of World War II, since decolonization specifically, which started in 1957, Pan-Africanism, like, big thing, right?
Right.
So there are regional organizations in Africa, and then there are continental-wide organizations in Africa. And in 2000, the African Union, which was new at the time, adopted the Lomé Declaration, which basically said the continent is committed to constitutionalism. If you break the constitution or suspend the constitution and you're a military ruler, like, we're going to kick you out of the AU.
Okay, the African Union.
The African Union. You can't be a member anymore. And then in 2001, ECOWAS, which is the Economic Community of West African States, which is a regional group in West Africa, adopted a declaration that said basically the same thing, which was really big, because if it's much easier for ECOWAS to suspend a country than the African Union, because it's smaller. And ECOWAS is the Economic Community of West African States. So if you have a military coup and you're kicked out of ECOWAS, all of a sudden you don't have access to the Economic Community of West African States, which is a big problem. Like, not only are you seen as a completely illegitimate governor in the eyes of the world, you have no aid, you can't participate in the UN, really, you're just, like, not taken seriously. All of a sudden, you also aren't a member of your economic community, which can have really big consequences. And also, it's just, like, a bad look. So, that's... those regional institutions and those protocols, I hypothesize, are, like, the main reason that coups have decreased since 2000. But then you see a resurgence of them in the past 2.5 years, and they have still been going on this whole time, just less frequently in West Africa. So, in political science, you would say that that is a sufficient but not necessary deterrent of military coups. So what that means is that you need these protocols in order to stop military coups, but they're not enough to do it by themselves. They're not sufficient. Like, you need something else. The something else that I hypothesize are institutionalized elections. And that's kind of like a packed word. So elections, you know what an election is. But the idea that they're institutionalized means that they are a norm of behavior. And they're a norm of behavior, in my definition, that actually determines politics. So they're not just a norm that happen every 4 years, but you know that they're a sham. They're like meaningful, real elections. And in order for meaningful, real elections to be institutionalized, you need two main things, in my opinion. One is civil liberties. Like, the people are free to participate in the political arena without the threat of their rights being taken away.
Right.
Which is not, like, that's kind of an ephemeral thing and also difficult to ensure. Like, are there widespread civil liberties in the United States? Maybe not. So that's the first thing. And second thing is a political attitude or public attitude that favors democracy over military rule. So you need both elites and the public to all agree, this is the way that we're doing politics. Like, we're done with coercion, force or the credible threat of force, as the way of changing politics, and instead we're doing elections. And you need both those things to have, like, real meaningful elections. So, I hypothesize that in those countries, when you would maybe have wanted to have a military coup before, now you turn to elections, and the regime stays the same. Whereas countries that haven't institutionalized elections, coercion is still the status quo for how you're doing politics. So, then you have a military coup. So that's the hypothesis.
And then hypothesis.
You have to test the hypothesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I need to... that's the next step. Reading a lot of reading about these protocols, and then a method called process tracing, which is a qualitative method of analysis in political science, where you apply formal tests to hypotheses about causal mechanisms, so, like, why things happen. And you basically, like, read a lot about the event and the timeline of events and all the things that were going on and what people were saying. And you test to see, like, did this meeting have to have happened in order for this outcome to occur? Maybe there are other things that also had to happen for this outcome to occur. Like, what exactly caused this event? That's what I'll be doing. And then maybe a little bit of, like, data analysis for public attitudes, because you can use Afrobarometer, which is this big Pan-African survey, to learn about public attitudes. That's what I did over the summer.
That's pretty cool.
So I might just like kind of pull that in for the political attitudes portion. But we'll see how the process tracing goes. That's kind of, it's kind of a lot of work.
I didn't even, yeah, that's a lot. That sounds great.
Yeah.
So what is public opinion right now in West Africa? Is it vary by state or is
Yeah. Okay. So a good question, and you bring up a good point, is like, what is the best unit of analysis for this for any issue in the region, right? Because you can think of, like, when Americans think of Africa, they think of Africa, the continent.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of countries on the continent. So then you think the country level. Well, but if you go, this is something my one of my professors, my advisor, she says a lot. She's like, every issue that you hear about in any country in Africa is also a regional issue. So is it best to understand issues at the regional level, at the country level, or at the continental level? I think the broad scope I understand at the regional level because West Africa has had more coups than any other region. But there is diversity within the continent. Like Ghana hasn't had a military coup in over 30 years.
Hmm.
Burkina Faso had one, 6 weeks ago? So there's a difference there. And there's difference in public opinion about democracy. So my project over the summer compared Benin, which is kind of like on the southern end of West Africa, it's coastal, with Mali. Benin has not had military coups since like 1972, and Mali has had a lot. And in Mali, support for democracy over military rule is much lower than in Benin. Like in Benin, more people say democracy is the best form of government. And in Mali, fewer people say that, and more people are likely to say either, like, it doesn't matter what kind of government we have, or military rule is, like, a credible form of government. And that also changes, like, depending on who's in power. But it definitely varies, which I think is part of the... You know, that's like a main point of my hypothesis, is that that variation is really important to the outcomes that we see.
Okay. And what do you attribute to the rise of the number of coups in the last 2 years? Because like you said, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, so that's something that like a lot of other scholars are thinking about.
Okay.
Are coups contagious? Well, like, that's a little bit naive. Like, people are smart enough to, like, make their own decisions about whether they have military coups. But part of it is, like, okay, maybe Mali had a coup, and then all of a sudden, a lot of people did. I think part of the problem is security issues. There's a lot of terrorism in West Africa. And civilian governments have had a hard time keeping terrorists in control, which is really frustrating for the military. That happened in Mali. I think part of it is, there are a lot of, air quotes, democratic leaders that have been in power for a really long time that aren't very democratic. So it's like, well, clearly the system isn't working. So like maybe we need to disrupt it altogether. But I don't really know. That's part of what I hope to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people that do know, and it's not that the world doesn't know, it's that I haven't read enough. But I everyone's trying to figure it out.
Okay.
In the field as well. It's an interesting problem. But it's also, like, just looking at military coups, it also ignores everything else that's going on in the region. Like, okay, maybe there weren't 6 military coups in 2 years, 4 years ago. But there is still violence.
Right.
Like, there are still people that didn't have rights.
Right.
So the coups are interesting, but they're not, like, the only part of the story, I think.
Okay.
That doesn't really answer your question, because I don't have an answer to your question.
No, yeah, no. That makes sense. You know, maybe underlying,
Underlying
tensions
problems
just kind of bubbled up all at the same time, you know? That's a possibility.
Well, and, like, one of the coups, one of the presidents in Chad, he died on the battlefield, and his son suspended the Constitution so that he could take power.
Suspended the Constitution.
So, like, that's a military coup.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, it's not, like, a lot of people... They're not always civil wars. They're not always violent. I mean, this one happened to be violent, and many of them are. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that.
Okay, no, yeah, that's great. Okay, and how'd you get into this research? That's super, like, why West Africa? Why? Because it's a very... I would hazard a guess.
Yeah.
It's just, like, not
It's, like, far from what I've...
Much, yeah.
yeah, what I've known. Well, so, good question. I took African political economy my sophomore fall with Professor Robinson, and I didn't know when I signed up that it is like a seminar, like it's a capstone course. I did my capstone course for international relations as a sophomore fall, and I got there and I was like, oh my god, I have like no idea what I'm doing. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah,
I can't. But the only assignment for the whole course was a research paper. Like, the only assignment for the whole course was a research paper at the end. And I was so... you should, like, if you ask my, like, housemates from the time, they would have been like...
Really?
She's absolutely freaking out.
No.
I didn't know what I was going to write about. I was so overwhelmed. But I was deep in economics at the time. I was, like, working on my... Because I did my 3 degrees in order. I did IR, political science, and then French. So I knew that I would, like, complete the ones that I wanted to complete the most. So I was deep in my IR degree, which is mostly economics. And so I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, and I started with, okay, I want to study... I also speak French, so I was like, West Africa is the most French-speaking part of the continent.
Okay.
So, like, let's start there. And I wanted to start with examining French neocolonialism. And very early my advisor... Professor Robinson was like, that's like really broad.
Yeah.
It's like really broad. Like, maybe read a little bit more. So then I learned about, in one of the things that I read, or a few of the things that I read, the Communauté Financière Africaine, the African finance community, which is a currency union in West Africa, which I didn't even know existed. So then I was going to study French neocolonialism via the CFA. And what I ended up studying, which is kind of the same thing, is... So this is an institution, a financial an economic institution that's existed since the end of the colonial period.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really benefit anyone.
Okay.
Like, it's bad for most Africans. The French get a little bit out of it. But it doesn't, like... It's not huge for the French. So then... Who are the stakeholders? Like, who's involved in this? And why does it still exist?
Right.
If it's not actually that...
Yeah, doing useful, anything.
Doing anything.
Productive.
So that was what my paper was about. And it was, like, really stressful to write that paper because I didn't know what I was doing. But it was also really interesting. I feel like... So my parents both work in American, like, domestic public policy. And I had been, was like relatively well versed in the American political like sphere. And I feel like so often, and maybe you heard this with Spencer, people are like, well, we want to make all these changes. We want to do all these things. But here's a list, like, so long that tells you why we can't. Here are all of the barriers to making this change. We don't have both houses of Congress. Like, the Constitution is difficult to amend. White privilege is so rampant in our society that we can't make any changes to social welfare. Like, we don't have the money for that. There are too many... it's a state issue, not a federal issue. At the state level, like, the Supreme Court... Like, there's so many reasons. And there are reasons why you can't make change in West Africa, but it's a lot... There are a lot fewer. Like, it's a lot easier to be inventive and excited and listen to, like, people that are coming up with really good, really interesting ideas And instead of being like, okay, well, that's a fun thought exercise, but it's never going to work. Like, it might work. Like, there's a good chance that it will work. And, like, actually, it's possible to implement it. So, like, why not? Let's think about it. Let's talk about it. Let's try. I find that, like, way more interesting and way more exciting.
Sure.
Than thinking about all of the things you could do in American politics and being like...
Well, that's not going to happen.
And then I can also use my French, which is super cool.
Okay.
And so I realized that I really liked writing that paper after it was done. It helped that I got a really good grade on it. And
excellent.
She was like, because I was struggling and I was like, I don't feel like I can do this. I've had a lot of imposter syndrome. And I got the grade back and she was like, yeah, this is how you do this. This, like, you're doing it right. And, like, you can learn, but you're doing it right. And I was like, oh, like, maybe I can research this.
Okay.
And that the idea that there's no barrier from, like, anyone researching anything. I was like, well, I'm not African. Like, I'm also not black. I can't study Africa. Which, to some extent, is true. Like, I don't want to be the only voice in the room. And something that is a trend in the development space, like, you know, like economic development, political development, are buzzwords associated with Africa, often like funded by rich white people with no real regard for the people that it's impacting, like actual Africans. And so there's a shift in that space towards development programs run by Africans, which like makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
So entering my career, I'm like, well, there is no place for me here. Like, my opinion is not relevant. I don't, like, I shouldn't be implementing anything. It doesn't impact me. And, like, that is true. But it doesn't mean that I can't listen and, like, engage. I don't want to be the only voice, and I will never be the only voice, but there's no one that's like, well, white people can't study Africa. Like, Americans can't study Africa. That's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no cussing.
Oh, no cursing. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's silly. I can study whatever I want to study.
Yeah.
As long as I'm listening, too, it doesn't really, like, it's fine.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah, I just think it's fun. I think it's interesting. And I think there's always room for, like, people in a field that listen.
Yeah.
So.
I think anybody should be able to study anything they want.
Oh,
I think
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Ridiculous that, I mean, like, I understand where people are coming from, but I think that the only way that, if you want to address whatever grievance is happening in society, whether that be racism or sexism or whatever, you need to have people on both sides exploring what the heck's happening. You
right,
know? That's
right.
The point.
Well, and it's like, you would never say, like, I would never say that immigrants couldn't study American politics.
Right, exactly.
Like, I think immigrant voices are maybe the most important in American politics. And granted, that's, like, a totally different perspective than
sure.
me saying, like, okay, it's totally cool for the colonizers to, like, study Africa.
Exactly.
That's a very different message, but, I think it's true, so.
Yeah.
Well, not that colonizers, I mean, okay, colonizers can study Africa, but not, anyway, I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into it.
Super interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you want to continue that work past Tufts, you think? Or do you think
know.
You want to try something new?
That's kind of what I'm trying to find a job that is, like, kind of research-oriented. But my scope is, like, relatively broad. I'm kind of willing to do anything because I want to just, like, explore what the opportunities are. I don't want to be boxed in based on what my undergraduate experience is. Like, I tend to set myself, put boxes around, like, what I can and what I should do for no reason except that, like, that's what I feel like I should do.
Okay.
Or, like, what I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, like, I had a box. I was like, when I signed up for African political economy, I was like, I'm just going to take an Africa-focused class this one time. But, like, I don't study Africa.
Yeah.
I'll never study
just,
Africa.
I'm just doing it to broaden myself.
Yeah. But, like, it's not really it's not for me.
Right.
And there was, like, the only reason that I thought that was because I had never done it before. So, I don't want to be like, well, I'm only studying Africa now, West Africa, because I'm 20, 21, 22, and it's what I've done for 2 years. Like, that's so silly.
Yeah.
Gotta be more broad than that. And then also, nobody's an expert in, like, in order to be an expert in anything, you have to be an expert in a lot of things.
Right.
So, why box yourself in?
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, don't let it define you, right?
There's so many interesting things to do. Why would I box myself in?
Why does West Africa, yeah.
And if I, okay, so like, let's say I get a job where I study the Middle East, and then I, in a year, I hate it. Okay, well, then I'll find a new job.
Sure.
Like, the next year. Mm-hmm. I'm trying very hard to think, like, 1 year ahead.
Okay.
And not more than that.
Not more than that.
Because then I start, you know, I tend to think about my life like 5 years in advance.
Okay.
But then I always get there and I'm like, wait, I actually don't want this anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So why am I still on this path? It's like, okay. Well, because I wanted it 5 years ago. Well, like, I'm a different person than I was 5 years ago. So I don't want it anymore. So I'm trying very hard to think just 1 year at a time.
Okay. So what is the dream job? Well, I know that you just said that you don't like to think about it, but what is the dream job that Rachel Hallady wants to have?
I think the dream job is I'm like a professor at a bit like a prestigious university. Stanford, Cal, right?
Yep. Easy.
Probably in Cal. I want to go to California. Maybe in California.
Okay.
I'm a professor. Well, it doesn't really matter. I would be a professor anyway. But I'm a professor, but I don't really teach.
Mm.
I just kind of like am paid by the university. But what I really do is I provide like policy advice to people. So I don't work at a think tank. I'm not tied down by actually having to do real work.
Yep.
Instead, I'm a professor, so I can kind of just do whatever I want. This shows that I don't really know what it means to be a professor.
Sure, yeah.
But then, I write my little books. I
write that little book. Yeah.
I go and I give advice to other people. So, like, you write your book about politics, and then you go talk about it everywhere, and people want to hear your opinion about what they should do. So then you go consult with them.
Consult.
That's my dream job. Hopefully make
bank. That is a cool dream job. Yeah, no, you know, get that tenure professor salary. Do whatever the heck you want.
And then never teach.
Well,
but I would like teaching. I feel like it's exciting to, like, show other people the field.
Yeah. And I think there's, like, I don't know, maybe this is just me ranting about my experience at Tufts, but I feel like, and like a lot of people, or like including you or me or anybody, could do a really good job of like getting people excited about a certain topic.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, I feel like the professors here, and I think the professors at a lot of places, just maybe they don't care enough, but I think that if you just put in a little bit, like just spice it up a little bit more.
Yeah,
and like,
they're so deep in their careers
that they're not excited about them anymore. Yeah, I think like teaching is important, and it's like that could be the difference between getting, you know, somebody new into your field and just saying, and then maybe in my case, I don't want to do IR because of the X and X reason, because of Miss Greenhill, or like what my experience in class, you know.
Yeah.
Which she didn't do a bad job. She's a good teacher, but
yeah, it's just not for you.
Yeah, just not for me.
Not for you.
So yeah, I think that's super interesting. Again, you could be a professor. I could see it.
Yeah, you know? I would be, but I would also like work at a think tank. I don't know. I think something that I've realized is that my scope of what a good career is very limited to what I know from my childhood.
Yeah.
Like I grew up in a very wealthy, very white suburb of DC, and all of my my parents and all of my parents' friends are like policy analysts or doctors or lawyers or scientists. There's like no diversity.
No variation,
so in my head, I'm like, okay, like this is what everyone does.
Yeah.
And then Andrew, my boyfriend Andrew, he's from like rural Nevada, rural California, and his scope of like what people do is like teacher, firefighter, farmer, ski patroller, like all of these things. Like he has all of these friends that are like friends from high school that are married, they have kids, they have houses, and they're making absolute bank as welders an electrician.
Oh, yeah, no.
And, like...
Yes, yes.
Like, he has this group of friends that all work for this excavation company that's based in Reno, Nevada, and the company sends them, like, all over the country, but mostly in the West, to, like, dig out mountains for construction projects. And it's really fun. They get to travel to all of these beautiful places with their friends, because they all work there together.
Yep.
They get paid to go to these places. They get paid to come visit home on the weekends. Like, they don't have to pay
what?
To travel. The company pays for them to travel.
Wow.
And they make so much money. They make
really?
So much money. And granted, I'm not going to be like an excavator
right.
as my job, but it's made me like, I don't think I have the skills to be a ski patroller either, but it's like my schema for good jobs is so small.
Yeah.
And the reason that I don't know about other jobs is because I don't know that they exist. So
wow.
I'm trying in my senior year to like explore more. Like there was this job that Andrew emailed me because when he graduated, he signed up for all of these like lists to be sent emails when various organizations were hiring. And one of them was the National Park Service
mm-hmm.
and like the California State Park System. And there is this job from the California State Park System for someone to do like outreach for the state parks, where they travel around the state and they engage with the politicians from that area and the
yeah.
community to
mm-hmm.
like get people engaged in the state parks. That would be a great job for
yeah,
me. I'd be really
fun.
Good at that.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know that was something that existed.
Right.
So
it's just crazy. Yeah, I feel like just Tufts has made that sense worse for me, actually.
Oh,
I feel
absolutely.
So just because
yeah.
everyone is like, because there's a set of jobs that are
yeah,
seen
like,
as the prestigious desirable jobs.
Yeah, you either like
you know?
Go to a big finance company,
yep. mm-hmm.
you go to law school, you go to med school,
yep,
like
to work at a startup, you know.
Yeah, you work at a
be
startup.
Be a founding father for a startup, you know.
It's, yeah, you found your own startup.
Exactly.
It is. It does. It feels very limiting.
It is very limiting.
And I think there's a stigma attached with not pursuing those paths.
Yes.
Even if that's not what you want.
Right.
Or you'd be really good at something else.
Right.
Like, what is so undesirable about being a ski patroller as your career?
And being
like,
the best.
And being like,
saving
that
lives.
Sounds like really fun.
Yes.
You like get to ski every day.
Mm-hmm.
You get to save lives. You get to engage with people about a sport that you love.
Right.
You make money. You get to be in the great outdoors. That sounds like an ideal job.
Yeah. You're right.
Way more than working at a finance company.
Yeah.
So, but then why would we look down on someone that's a ski patroller as like not
right.
having a real career?
Right.
Well, like, they work just as hard as you do. So, well, not you, but like, you know.
They're contributing.
The, yeah, the
and,
rest
know,
of the world.
Helping people
they
out.
Keep you safe.
They keeping people safe.
So.
Letting people enjoy themselves and keeping people safe.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't
I
know.
I agree, just, though, that Tufts has made that worse
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of elite institutions do that in general. I think that that's just the reality of living here. And everyone, I mean, the reality is everybody who's at, or I guess 60% of people who pay full price at Tufts kind of come from that background, like
oh,
you're
yeah.
saying. So it's just
right.
like,
so then you have
happen?
All of your friends are like me.
Correct.
And their parents are policy analysts, and all
yep.
of their parents' friends are doctors, lawyers, and mm-hmm. scientists.
That's right.
It's just not a very big, yeah, when you're surrounded by people whose experiences are all the same,
the
it's
same.
Really easy to be like, oh, well, this is just like how the world is.
Yeah, this is what I have to
this
do.
This is like the only option,
the only option
for me.
I'm going to die otherwise. I'm not going to make money. I'm going to be
right.
seen as lesser, right, as you
right.
were saying.
Right, yeah.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, I have this coworker who just moved here from Alabama with her husband. She's 22.
To Medford, Massachusetts.
To Medford, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Her husband is pursuing a graduate degree in philosophy.
Okay.
And she works at Tamper with me. She's younger. She and her husband are both younger than Andrew. They got married in May.
Wow.
They're religious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that life is so... I forgot. Like, there are people like that got married at 22 and, like, came to do graduate degrees.
Mm.
And it's a good way, like, that's, this world is not our, like, the whole world. There's so many other ways to, and, like, do I want to be like them? No. But are they, like, perfectly pleasant when I interact with them at Tamper?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. She makes great coffee.
Sure.
So, and she's happy, and that's what she wants to do. And she doesn't have the same perspective of, like, there are only a certain number of things that I can do. I'm like, oh, that's actually very refreshing.
Yeah.
They're like, your life is just as valid as mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though we want different things.
Sure.
I haven't talked about politics yet, though. So.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, we unfortunately have to start wrapping up. Yeah, okay. But thank you for coming on. Very informative conversation. Very, very diverse set of things. So,
you can
yeah.
tell I love hearing, listen. Like, I love listening to myself talk. I'm great at it.
Well, you get to listen to yourself over. You can listen to yourself over and over with recording.
Is that the reason that I'm a coxswain? Because I just can listen. I'm the only one that gets to talk. I just get to listen to myself.
Yeah.
No, but like maybe.
Maybe. All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Of course.
We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Who's going to be your next guest?
I'm not really sure yet. I think, well, I guess I could preview for the audience. Well, I have a little recording of a professor
Ooh,
that I interviewed, my sociology professor, which will be really exciting.
That's very cool.
And we had like a discussion for 30 minutes about just like American society in general. And
that's very
cool. So I'm very glad that I figured that out. That was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, have a good one. Stay
Thanks,
cool, Medford.
Everyone.
Yep. See ya.
Some excavation on Magnolia Boulevard. Yes, I'm going insane, and I'm laughing at the frozen rain. Well, I'm so alone. Honey, when they gonna send me home? Bad sneakers and the pina colada, my friend. Stomping on the avenue by Radio City. That white tuxedo, how you gonna beat the heat? Do you take me for a fool? Do you think that I don't see that ditch out in the valley that they're digging just for me? Yes, I.